I'm Amanda McNulty with Clemson Extension and Making It Grow, and this is Making It Grow Extra. And Davis Sanders is my guest today. Davis came down from South Pleasantburg Nursery in Greenville. He comes a lot to be on the show, and I thought it'd be fun if he came early and we could talk about some things, because Davis is, first of all, knowledgeable and also fun to learn from. So, Davis, thank you so much.
Well, thanks for the compliment, Amanda. It's always a pleasure to come down here, and I'm quite fond of saying I always go back home with more than I came down with.
Well, I brought you a loaf of bread today, so that may have to fill the thing, because I don't know if I'll have any information that I can give you.
Well, I've already learned a lot today, but thank you.
Davis, everybody's interested in pollinators now, and of course the European honeybee, which I guess you consider that kind of the industrial pollinator, wouldn't you say?
You could term it like that. You know, the honeybee did not exist in North America until the Europeans brought them over.
Yeah,
it is imported. And I've always been fond of saying that the wonderful thing about nature is when something leaves a niche, something else steps in and fills it. Now, in a lot of cases with the endangerment of the honeybees from whether it's pesticide damage or the tracheal bee mites or some of the other pests that are affecting the honeybees. For the home gardener, there are always going to be mason bees and bumblebees and blueberry bees, the little leafcutter bees that are closely related to the mason bees. There are going to be butterflies and moths, moths in particular. So the home gardener is always going to have some pollinators available.
Now, if they are careful about pesticide use and things like that.
Yeah. Right. Where in a commercial setting, there just aren't enough of those smaller pollinators to provide pollination for a commercial or an industrial type farming operation. So the honeybee is absolutely necessary.
But, and so there are things we can do, because we want the honeybee to go into the winter with as much reserve and strength as she can. But we also have other bees that are going to continue to be out there operating until the females who are going to be the overwintering individuals finally do go to ground, which is I guess most of them find places to kind of hide in the ground.
Right.
And so, but a lot of the things in our garden, our coneflowers, a lot of our zinnias, things that we plant that are out there. Something I got from you that I just love, agastache, or you pronounce it differently, I think.
I pronounce it agastache. I feel that the Latin CH should be pronounced K.
So I'll try to do that, but I probably won't be able to remember. But at least I planted it, and gracious goodness, I go out there and it's just covered with things. But those things, they're kind of petering out. They had a long bloom period, but they're starting to shut down, and I can see that. So what are some things that are really good for us to make sure that we can encourage, just not for no other reason than just to enjoy seeing them in the garden, because I love to go out there and see them, but also to make sure that we're doing our part to try to keep those populations strong?
Well, one of the first things that you can do when you take into consideration all of these pollinators, with the exception of the honeybee, are native species, take a look around you and see what's blooming in the woodlands, in the meadows, in the pastures.
Uh-huh.
Going into fall and early winter, because the insects and other pollinators that have been around for all these centuries were feeding on something a long time ago and a long time before we got here.
That's
so
true.
And a lot of those plants are still out there.
Uh-huh. And so what are some of those that you're thinking of?
Well, for fall pollination or fall pollinator attraction, it's kind of hard to beat asters, goldenrod.
Yes. Uh-huh.
A lot of the fall blooming native perennials, such as the quilons or turtleheads, those are also instrumental in boggy areas and in some cases rain gardens.
And these are ones that traditionally start their bloom period later towards the end of summer, so it's going to carry over into the fall. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Right.
And we can also supplement that with imported plants or cultivars of the native plants that are also blooming at this time of year. Things like Caryopteris or Bluebeard. That is almost as great a pollinator attractor as the agastache is. Most of the mints, particularly mountain mint, are coming into bloom about this time of year that have a real heavy bloom cycle.
They do like that, don't they?
Mm-hmm, they certainly do.
Mm-hmm.
I mentioned asters,
And asters are color, fill a colors gap kind of for us, don't they?
Yes, they do. It's one of those great plants for what I call the desperate season, when when it's too hot for, or too late for the summer annuals and too hot for the fall and winter annuals, and everybody's desperate to put something with some color into their yard. Well, along comes the asters, the Boltonia, star flowers. That's a native that blooms about this time of year. And, of course, everybody is familiar with all the different eupatoriums, the Joe Pye weed, the native boneset, the black snake root, some of the other native plants that are woodland natives that would be normally blooming about this time of year, like the semisifuga, the bugbane, cardinal flower, great lobelia. All of those are excellent pollinator attractors, and all of them are blooming right now.
Now, how about some woody plants? This is certainly not a native, but I've often enjoyed on my walks around town seeing a place where one of my cousins planted some of those single sasanquas.
The sasanquas, particularly the open flowered ones, like the singles and semi doubles, are excellent because they're coming into bloom about the time that the bees are going to be going to rest. And the fact that it's got such a wide open flower and it's such a heavy pollen and nectar producer, it's just natural that the pollinators are going to find it. You know, a lot of times when we think pollinators, we think the big showy species like the monarch butterfly and the swallowtails and the fritillaries and hummingbirds. But to me, the smaller pollinators are even more fascinating. The little sweat bees, we've mentioned the blueberry bees and leafcutter bees. The tiny butterflies like the skippers and hair streaks, the azures, the sulfurs, all of those are, to me, equally fascinating, or equally beautiful and even more fascinating because of their feeding habits.
That's true. Another thing I think we ought to consider is I try to keep some water out because the fall can be awfully dry. Mm-hmm. And this may sound silly, but I have a stick. I have a big kind of tray, and I have a stick in it that sticks out the edge because I have in the past sometimes found drowned bees and things in there. Hmm. They get in there, and the material at the edge is kind of slick, and they can't get out. So I have to leave a little platform to walk out and walk out.
Well, and a shallow concrete bird bath would fill the same.
That's true, because they could just walk right to the edge.
Right, and the concrete's going to be a little bit rough, so they'd be able to
better
get a
traction.
Foothold.
Yeah,
and capillary action right around the edge where the water is going to pull it up into that one molecule thickness, which butterflies find particularly attractive.
Oh,
if you've ever during butterfly season, you can actually take a natural sponge, not a synthetic sponge, cut it so that it has a flat side, soak it in water and just set it in the bird bath and watch the butterflies come to it.
My word. Mm-hmm. Well, one thing, we've had some late watermelons this year. Our growers are so good. You know, they always have those 4th of July watermelons, but then they've got them coming on through the fall. Mm-hmm. And instead of just getting rid or immediately cutting up your watermelon rind and putting in the compost heap, if you put out the scooped out watermelon, you would just not believe how the butterflies love to come and feed on that watermelon rind.
Mm-hmm.
It's delightful to see.
A little bit of sugar, a lot of moisture, and that's exactly what butterflies look for, and a flat surface to land on. I found it interesting that I have some yarrow in my backyard, which has a great reputation for being a butterfly attractor because it's got those big flat-topped flower clusters. But right next to it, I had a whirling butterfly's gara, which is a very delicate flower.
Yes.
Extends quite a bit above the body of the plant, and the butterflies are going to that first. Not necessarily because it was a good place for them to perch, but I guess because it produces a lot of nectar.
I think the food is more important than the decor when they choose their restaurants, don't you?
Right.
Yeah. And it does add so much to your yard, even if not much is blooming or you know it's just been the same old thing for a week or two. When you go out there and there's all that movement going on. Mm. You know, it's just a whole nother level of enjoyment, isn't it?
Yes, it is. And I sent a video to Making It Grow to the, I posted it on the Facebook page, of a tardiva or tardiva hydrangea in my backyard that was just absolutely teeming with pollinators. I counted about 15 different types of insects just in that little 17, 18 seconds that I was recording it on my phone. So there are a lot of unexpected places where you can find these pollinators. Another thing that I really would love for people to be a little more careful about are their bug zappers. People that put out an electric bug zapper think they're doing something for the mosquito population, no. But mosquitoes are not attracted to ultraviolet light. Uh-huh. Whenever you hear that big crackle, there's a very good chance that you are hearing a moth that's attracted mm-hmm. to that ultraviolet light. And moths are almost as important a pollinator as bees
are. The bees. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So if you've got a bug zapper, please take it down.
Yeah. Unplug it and save on the electricity.
Right.
Well, I'm glad that you didn't save on gas. I'm glad that you made the long trip. And you brought some plants for us to talk about tonight. And I think you and I better go out there and look at what you've got so that we can talk about it and sound like we know something when the show starts.
Sounds like fun to me.
All right. Thanks so much, David.
Thank you, Amanda.